10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Live from Suffolk, this is The Late Show with Libby Isaac.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to The Late Show with me, Libby Isaac. It's the 7th of September, and tonight we're going to be talking about mental health, and in particular the mental health of young people within schools. Do you have early intervention? Is it key? And what does it even look like as a teacher? Tonight we've got special guest Jo Morton-Brown on, who is a mental health school speaker, amongst other things, and Hayley Coles, a pastoral support lead within
Live
a secondary
from
school.
Suffolk. This is The Late Show with Libby Isaac on Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live at ttradio.org or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and thank you again for tuning in. I'm really excited about this evening's show. Got a lot going on, and we've got some really good guests on to come and talk to us about mental health, amongst other things. So how was your weekend? And what has happened to the weather? I mean, you've gone back to school and it's turned into, I don't know, Barbados out there. It's absolutely beautiful. So the weekend, I actually went to a wedding. And I went to a wedding by myself and my lovely two children and my husband stayed at home. And about 3 hours drive, it was in the sunny Cotswolds. And again, it was absolutely stunning weather. And it's the best 3 hour drive of my life. I didn't have to listen to Frozen. I didn't have to listen to Kids Zone music. I didn't have to listen to Moana, even though I do hugely love Moana and the soundtrack. And I listened to some podcasts. I listened to actually two of the Teacher Talk Radio podcasts that I just sometimes don't get time to sit and really listen to. A bit of a shout out there, guys. But I also listened to Jeff Widdicombe and Rob Beckett's podcast about parenting hell. I don't know if anybody's listened to it before. And obviously it swears quite a bit, so it's definitely not one for the kids in the car. I think it's absolutely hilarious. Talking about parenting, but very much from a male perspective, from a men's point of view. And they have different guests on. It's a little bit like this. I'm not entirely sure. I'm quite similar to them, but it's just a really easy listen, and I was really enjoying myself on the drive and on the drive back home. I even stopped for a Diet Coke and a Burger King, so that tells you the state of my head, perhaps. And my brother went without his family, and my parents went. My sister was there. It was a little bit like we'd reverted back to being 18 years old again. Taxis were organised for us. You know, everything was put on. It's just one of those wonderful things, especially when your life is so different, going back to behaving like that. It was lovely. And, you know, how lucky are they for the weather? And, I mean, I'm not going to put a secret out there, but I work 0.6 at the moment. So today was one of the days that I spend with my 1-year-old and my 3-year-old. I sat on the beach with them this afternoon. I live really near a beach, and absolutely glorious, baking hot. Both of mine were in the sea. I was in the sea with them. We then walked, we went out for dinner, had an ice cream. And I was thinking, you know, should I tweet this? And then I actually had like a pang of guilt that I probably shouldn't, because, you know, my colleagues that perhaps not in that situation, or anybody who's at work in that situation. And then I just thought, well, I'm not going to tweet it, but I should never, never feel bad for that. And, you know, talking about my own mental health, that it was the most glorious day. And I do believe, I am at work tomorrow though, I do believe that the sunshine is going to continue tomorrow. And I hope it has been very much sunny where you have been as well. So today's show, we're going to be talking about mental health. I have put in the chat box already. And if you wanted to text into the show at TT Radio or text live now, if you're listening live, it would just be a really good starter for us to start thinking about where we're at with it. So I've put in, already, what do you want to know about students' mental health? Do you know what there is to offer within a school setting? Do you know how it or how you as a teacher or even HLTA or anybody that works within a school, do you know how to help students when they show those signs? Okay, that's where we're going to start the conversation today. And that's where we're going to start it when we're going to invite Jo Morton Brown in. We're going to find a little bit about her as well. We've also got Hayley Coles, who's going to be joining us at 9 o'clock. And she, you know, she works directly in the school setting as we speak and has all the experience going on in front of her every single day. So we're going to be finding out from her some of these answers to some of these questions. And I just, you know, I think it's a really important topic. Obviously, it's a very important topic. So a little bit more about that and coming up what we're going to be discussing. I'm just going to roll into an advert and afterwards, I'm just going to have a chat with you about perhaps why I decided to base the show around this today.
Creative Resources, made for teachers by teachers. At Creative Resources, we've been rethinking what a classroom can be. We've created a huge range of more than 2,500 original and exciting resources that span across more than 15 different subject areas. Whether you're looking for primary or secondary level resources, careers options, PSHE, arts or humanities, Creative Resources have the resources for you. We offer full curriculum packages and unique challenging escape rooms themed on topics such as Shakespeare, Tudors and fractions. We have quizzes, task cards, Tarsia puzzles and lots more. Better still, more than 100 resources can be accessed for free. Just visit our website www.cre8tive.com.
I apologise, I didn't mean to. I actually clicked the button and I stopped that advert, which is not the best thing to do, but never mind. We'll carry on. So one of the reasons why I wanted to do a show around mental health, and we are going to be talking about staff's mental health as well, because obviously we're all teachers and that is a real prominent topic that we need to be thinking about. First of all, you know, it's the beginning of term. And when you start a new term, you generally have new staff who start in a school. You know, you've got your ECTs who are new to everything anyway. But you've also got new staff within a new setting. And if you've got new staff and they don't know the students or they're not up to date with the students yet, it can be quite daunting for one of the things to catch yourself up on. And the students themselves are returning from their longest break. Not only that, we've just had a pandemic. So for them, their own mental health has, everything's been very different. And getting them back to some kind of normality after a pandemic, it seems like it's a real pivotal moment to talk about it. And I know that, you know, other people, you know, especially Jo when she comes on later, and Hayley, this is what they do. They talk about it. They talk about it with staff. They talk about it with students. They talk about it with anybody because it is a really, really important thing to talk about. So we are going to be talking about, you know, how as leaders, how as teachers, we can help people within school with it. We're going to be looking at what early intervention means. And I want to know how confident you are when it comes to supporting students with mental health, because it's really daunting. It's one of those really quite, it's one of those scary things that actually you don't talk about as an ECT or you don't talk about as a new member of staff, but it's always there in the background. You know, does somebody open up to you? Yes, we all know what we need to do with that information, because you wouldn't be, you know, you wouldn't be teaching, you wouldn't have that job if you didn't. That's really important. But it still doesn't, it doesn't protect you for that feeling of, oh, okay, you know, I need to go and do this, I need to go and do this. Can I help through this? Can I help through that? What's in place to help train you as a staff member to look for those early signs, to, you know, guide them through that key intervention? Is it your role? You know, should you be looking towards different people, different individuals within your school? And that's why I think it's incredibly important to talk about, because yes, it's a taboo subject. Maybe it's not so much a taboo anymore, especially after a pandemic, actually. But I suppose it kind of still is a taboo subject, and I think it probably always will be. But I think in the eyes of thinking about a teacher, how does it make you feel when you need to deal with it, when you need to pick up on people with it? So it's about how can we support staff and ourselves to talk about it, because let's face it, staff are definitely the greatest asset within a school. So we need to upskill, we need to make sure that, you know, they have as much information as possible when it comes to something like this. And, you know, as a mum myself, the health and happiness of my children is probably one of the most important things in the whole world to me right now. And people are sending their children to the school that you're teaching at. So I am absolutely certain it means the whole world to them. So, you know, within this current climate, what is possible in schools, like, have the priorities with mental health changed because of that pandemic? You know, we're going to be discussing this with Joe as well. And it is so important because, you know, we can't hide from the fact that we have had a pandemic. I know we're coming through it, and I know, you know, it's a new term, it's a new start. But I think that pandemic held the mirror up to all of us. You know, it made us really think about ourselves. And if you think about how you were during that time personally and how that made you feel, I mean, I hold my hands up. I think I'm a real strong, really strong, resilient person. And I was okay. I was pregnant during the pandemic. I had to be sent home. I didn't even go to a shop for 9 months, for goodness sake. You know, that was quite scary in itself. My husband wasn't allowed to come to the scans. Like, I had to be all sorts of things going on there. And I was absolutely fine. And then we went into the second lockdown in the winter, the January, the February, the March, and I struggled a bit. I did struggle with my mental health, I think, and I think everybody did. So if we did that, can you imagine how, you know, the children felt? How, you know, your age 11, if think about secondary school setting, 11 to 16, how did that make you feel? You know, who were they locked up with? So it is an incredibly important topic to be thinking about. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. And I am really, really looking forward to and excited to talk to Joe about this. You know, is it still a taboo subject, especially within the younger generation compared to other illnesses? Do we not need to be, you know, I do think we're moving in the right direction. Obviously, we're moving in the right direction, but perhaps there should be one conversation when we're talking about health rather than mental health as being a separate one. And, you know, the best place to start driving that initiative is within schools, within school people, within the younger setting. And it'll be really interesting to hear and to know, what do we do in schools already? There's loads of things going on in schools to do with this subject, absolutely loads. And quite rightly, there should be a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of money has been pumped into this. You know, well-being within schools, you've got PE and arts initiatives for the priority for children, you've got mental health first aiders, you've got student ambassadors themselves, and I actually listened to I think it's a podcast on the Chartered College Teaching Chartered College, and they did a podcast around this, and it caught my attention because it was a school that my cousins went to up near Manchester, and they have mental health well-being ambassadors, but they're the student ambassadors who are in charge of mental health within their school. Obviously, it's led by a member of staff and guided, and they're trained, but students go to students for that help. And I haven't actually seen that in the schools that I've been working in, and I think that's an absolutely wonderful way to get young people talking about their own mental health, talking about, you know, what it means, how it makes them feel, you know, because going to an adult to talk through it sometimes is a bit daunting. And as we all know, talking is definitely an incredibly good cure for it. So these are some of the things that we're going to be talking about. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to play the news, and then we're going to come back in and we're going to keep talking about mental health. We're going to be talking about what do you know, and then we're going to be talking to our fantastic guests today.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News.
This is your latest Teachers Talk Radio News with Gail Glenn. In Scotland, a major two-day online summit, which will take place on September the 13th and 14th, has been organised by Glasgow City Council and supported by Public Health Scotland and the UK Gambling Commission. An initiative has been highlighted where a programme is being developed to help educate young people about the dangers of gambling for schools in Glasgow. The University of Bristol recently released a report which stated that Glasgow contained one betting shop for every 3,264 people, the highest rate in the UK. Bailey Annette Christie, Convener for Wellbeing, Empowerment, Community and Citizen Engagement at Glasgow City Council's Policy Development Committee, said, "Right now there is a programme being developed, a pilot research study in some Glasgow schools, looking at early intervention and education of young people to understand the harms that can be caused by gambling." She said the programme was still at an early phase, with research in secondary schools being undertaken at the University of Edinburgh before it would be rolled out completely. Denise Coates, director of firm Bet365, was reported to have paid herself £469 million in a single year, the highest salary in UK history. As a result of soaring cases of COVID in Scotland and Northern Ireland since schools returned 3 weeks ago, the NAS UWT is calling for the Welsh Government to strengthen COVID control measures in schools. Dr. Patrick Roach, General Secretary of the NAS UWT, said ministers must not risk complacency or follow a strategy of crossing their fingers and hoping for the best if the number of COVID cases rise following school reopening. There is no reason for further disruption to pupils' education, where sensible and proportionate measures are taken to support the already tremendous efforts being taken by schools and staff. The latest data from Public Health Wales has shown that positive test results are at their highest since the pandemic started. This has been your daily education news briefing.
Excellent. As I was saying before the news came on, one of the things that came up when I was doing the research around, you know, we could spend a long time talking about this. You probably what I'm talking through this evening with my guests is going to be one tiny aspect of, you know, this whole massive topic that is obviously all over our schools and very much current on Twitter in the news at the moment. But it was that thing where it should be one conversation on health rather than separate. We should be talking to the students about health and perhaps not using the word mental health. I mean, when we speak to Jo in a bit, she might have an idea or a bit more on that as well. But that's just one thing that really stood out to me. And as I was talking through, we do a lot in schools already. Of course we do a lot in schools already. We absolutely have to do a lot in schools already for it. And I was saying that I just really like the idea of student wellbeing ambassadors being the students doing it, and the students driving some of that through their schools and their initiative. And if you do have that already set up in your schools, it would be really great to hear from you this evening, or if you could text in and say, yep, we have that, it works really well for these reasons, or perhaps there are barriers for other reasons too. I just really quite like that idea. And there are loads and loads of books around about this. One of the ones that I've read is by Kevin Hawkins. Read the book Mindful Teacher, Mindful School. And he does talk a lot about mental health, talks about the students, but he also talks about staff. And we can't not talk about the staff in this situation. And we are going to be talking about staff wellbeing as well in today's show. And one of the things that stood out, and it reminded me that there are a lot of people in schools, staff and students, who might be struggling with maintaining a positive wellbeing. And sometimes, I mean, we were talking through this actually last week. We've got an initiative in our school where you have wellbeing ambassadors. I don't know if you've got this as well. And it's a member of staff, did some training, got put forward to actually do a bit pot of money to promote wellbeing amongst the staff. And we were talking about it, and we were all just a bit, I was a bit like, it can't just be you. You can't be the only person going around putting your thumbs up and your thumbs down to staff around the school. That's really not what wellbeing is about. So, you know, going and setting up an initiative with the SLT or with the leaders or the middle leaders within the school. So there are lots of people who are doing that. That's that for me is definitely needed in a school. And I think, you know, having somebody come to your door and putting their thumbs up or thumbs down, you know, just that check-in, that is a really, really nice thing to feel. Because if you don't feel like you're coping for whatever reason, you could quickly tell them, and then they could go and sort something out so that you could have 5-minute break or 10-minute break or something. And it's just really nice to know that somebody is looking out for you in that way. Something in this book, which is by Kevin Hawkins, called Mindful Teacher, Mindful School, he quotes, teaching can both be nourishing and depleting. And if the overall balance swings towards the latter, sustainability and health can be at risk. And that is absolutely what it's all about. And, you know, it captures a lot of teachers' experiences, and it made me think, have we actually got a school that has sorted this out? Have you managed to find a school out there that, you know, sorts out the wellbeing of the students and sorts out the wellbeing for the staff? Because I think it's just ever developing and ever fluid. I think there's a lot of really good initiatives out there. I think there's loads and loads of interesting things out there. But has any school ever really got it right, especially when it comes to staff wellbeing? And that, again, is something that we need to talk about. And perhaps we can talk to Joe about that. Now, what I'm going to do, Joe's just called in. I'm going to play another advert just to give her a couple of minutes to get herself settled. She's on mute. And then I'm going to bring her in and introduce her into the conversation. And we'll be able to talk through some of the things that we've just been talking about there.
Every teacher loves stationery, right? Imagine getting a selection of fun, beautiful and unique stationery items designed and selected especially for teachers, delivered through your door every month. You need to check out teacherslovestationery.club.
I'm always so excited when the box arrives. It's such a treat.
My Teachers Love Stationery Club box is just a little treat to myself every month.
It's always full of delightful and surprising items, including some really good quality stationery brands like Faber-Castell and Stabilo.
And because you never know what you're going to get, it makes it even more fun and special when you get it.
It feels really great to be supporting a family business that's run by real teachers. I can't help feeling like they just know what I'm going to enjoy using stationery-wise better than I do myself.
Visit teacherslovestationery.club and enter the code TTRADIO when you buy your first stationery box to save £2 today. teacherslovestationery.club.
Lovely. Okay. Good evening, Joe. Can you hear me?
I can, Libby. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. That's absolutely brilliant. Are you okay?
I'm well, thank you. I'm so sorry for being late.
Oh, no, you're absolutely fine. You're fine. I haven't said anything. I don't know if you wanted to share that or not.
Oh, you haven't. Do you know what? I will. I was literally just getting ready. I was all organised and then along came a nosebleed. And you know when you're like, you cannot possibly be in two places at the same time right now. So just panic go, trying to get to the bathroom. So, yeah.
Well, are you okay? Are you okay?
I've never had a nosebleed before, so it's a bit weird, but we're okay.
I'm not sure who texted me, but I was like, oh no. Yeah, I thought so because it's the way the text was worded. But yeah, well, I'm glad you're fine and thank you so much. That's a lot of dedication right there. I was just thinking, that's all right. I've got another guest. We'll bring her on early and I'll quickly do some more research. I could talk for an hour. It's fine.
My word is my promise, and when I say I'll do something, I will most definitely do it. So,
Well, we are talking about well-being as well as sort of mental health for children as well. So, if you need to leave at any point, please, 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 just go. Okay.
Don't you worry. Thank you, though.
No worries. So, can you introduce yourself to those that are listening live or those that will sort of download it later? Give us a bit of background about you and what you do.
So, my name is Jo Morton Brown, and mm-hmm. I work as an emotional health practitioner. The reason that I call myself an emotional health practitioner is because I'm really fortunate that I have so many different hats that I wear.
Yep.
And those hats kind of vary from a school-based counsellor, a family support worker, a mental health trainer to adults about children and young people's mental health. I also travel to deliver school assemblies or PSHE lessons and workshops. And I do writing as well for blogs. And then, as you know, I started the YouTube channel last March, which is specifically to support, 10 to 19 year olds on YouTube, because that's where all the kids are nowadays on social media. So I thought I'd just go with one.
Joe, sorry to interrupt. Can you just speak a little bit closer into your mic or your phone?
Of course I can. Is that better?
Oh, that's much better. Thank you, Tom.
Okay. Just a variety of things that I do, and that allows me to kind of have, I love my job because I think I have such a variation. So that allows me to kind of flit in between and different days. I'm at different schools and doing different things. So I love it. So that's about me, really.
Sounds brilliant. And I am envious that you get to flit into different schools in that way. I think that's a real eye-opener for what you do as well. You get to see a lot of things when you do that, and you get to meet a lot of different students as well.
Yeah, most definitely.
Can you explain to an early careers teacher what you mean by well-being and mental health of students? So if you had to explain it to somebody who knows the term but doesn't really know what it means within a school setting.
Yeah, so basically what it is we've just got to bear in mind that, as we all know, we all have mental health. It's just as important as our physical health. But when it comes to adults, but we're going to kind of speak specifically right now about children and young people, is that we have to bear in mind that our mental health can affect the way that we think, feel and behave. Therefore, if we're working with a student, or if we have a student in our classroom that necessarily isn't in the right headspace with regards to their well-being, their mental health, then that just means that, are we going to be able to communicate with them as well? Because obviously poor behaviour, there's this fantastic quote, those kids that need the most love will ask for it in the most unloving ways.
Yeah.
So it's just about bearing in mind that what they may be presenting as being, difficult, challenging, is kind of just trying to think about what's really going on beneath that and what might be going on for them.
Can you give some examples of some of the mental health problems that students that you've come across have?
Yeah, so there's a variety. What age shall I go with, Libby? Shall I start off with little and then work my way up? Because I work with
that. Yeah, that'd be brilliant. Because I know that we have lots of a primary setting and secondary sort of audiences. So that'd be really good.
So if we start off with kind of those that are starting primary school, we have separation anxiety. And we have to bear in mind that separation anxiety is completely natural. You know,
yeah, my 1-year-old's definitely got this.
Yes, exactly. So it's a completely natural reaction. However, lockdown has made it harder because obviously mm-hmm. children have been used to being at home. You know, and if we go with a 4-year-old that's just started primary school, they know they will be able to remember more of life during COVID now compared to pre-COVID. So it's about having, you know, that separation anxiety. But as we work our way up, then we're starting to really see, and your listeners that are teachers within a primary school will know this, you will start to see those pupils that really struggle with regards to saying goodbye to their loved one. And it's trying to get them to realise that, you know, no matter how far apart you may be as a, you know, a little one, and wherever your mummy and daddy will be going, your parents and carers, you know, it's about that trust that they'll be coming back. Mm-hmm. So you have that. So, but then what starts to happen is we also get fears and phobias. And we also kind of, some children will get tics, which might be kind of related to anxiety.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of develops. And for some children, these fears and phobias can really get in the way. Sometimes they might be, with the speech and language, it may be bumpy words because it might be anxiety with regards to just the way that they're feeling that's affecting their speech. So it presents itself in lots of different ways. But what you have to bear in mind is there is this level of normal anxiety, this normal level of stress and worry that we want kids, teens, children to feel. It's just about the way that they deal with it. So then as we work our way up, a massive thing with transition, as we all know, you know, that leaving primary school, going up to secondary school, for some children that is just too much.
Yeah.
You know, with one of my classes, at my primary school in September, there was just, out of a class of 30, there was this just one particular student. It was just too much. So whilst they were all in the same boat, you could just tell for this one student, it was her world being tipped upside down and inside out. And then we're at an age now where we're starting secondary school, where friendships, social media, relationships, you know, home life, they're more kind of understanding or aware of maybe drugs and alcohol at home, kind of that ambivalent home life kind of balance. And then obviously we're talking about self-harm now because some children just don't know how to cope.
Yeah.
So I have the youngest that I've ever worked with, somebody that's self-harmed, is 9 years old, which is really sad.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. Personally, for me, it's around the age of 12 that they start this curiosity.
Hmm. I remember seeing that when I was 12. Not obviously with me, but yeah, and I remember being in school and seeing it around me.
Right.
Yeah, I know, and I just remember it, and I like, looking back, it's because obviously things were going wrong at home for them. Like one in particular, I mean, her sister died. So obviously that's how she began to cope, or that's how she expressed it. And it's just yeah, I really vividly remember seeing it from about the end of year 7 to 8 to 9, and then yeah.
Wow. So yeah, it's hard for a young person because they're at the age where they're not a child. Like my nephew at the moment is 12 years old, and he's just turned 12. He's a baby of the year group, and he's really in between being a big kid and playing at a park and enjoying it, and also lingering around adult conversations.
Yeah.
Just a bit too adult.
My little nephew's the same, yeah.
Yes, so you've got that transition. You know, they want this certain amount of responsibility, but at the same time, they want to be protected, which I get. So it's about that balance. And then just look, kind of going back to their mental health, you know, we've got social media, we've got maybe some extreme gamers that's all they're doing is literally playing on a gaming device. And the thing is, though, whilst I am a total fan of gaming, I'm sure if I had the time, I'd love it. It's about the reason why they're doing it. Is it because they're lonely? Is it because they're just so, you know, sad that they just try to avoid the way that they're feeling? So also kind of, I suppose, almost try to escape from their world by going on gaming devices. There's just so much subconscious, you know, we just don't really know what's going on for them. And then I suppose if we go to key stage 4, key stage 5, then we're talking about exams and we're talking about expectations. And for me personally, I find that my year 11s and my year 13s, there's almost this fear of growing up. It's this big fear. And it's not always kind of doing the exam sometimes. It's about leaving, knowing that they're going on to their next chapter. So I find that for them, certainly from your year 11s, they put so much pressure, or the pressure may come from their families or teachers, for them to do well, especially when teachers know that they have the capability to do
well.
That's the big thing.
I've seen that backfire as well. So the student then just can't cope and doesn't do well at all, actually.
No. And that must be really hard, really hard. So it's about that kind of expectations, either from, you know, and also a sense of competition for some of these students, is trying to be better than their friends or try to do better than their siblings. I always feel sorry for if there's a kind of the eldest sibling that's done really, really well. I always feel really sorry for any other sibling. I feel this sense of, you know, needing to do just as well as.
Yeah, I was a middle child. My sister did very well. And my brother, my youngest, did very well. I didn't do as well in the middle. Very sociable. But Tom's just texted in, actually. He's just said it could also be because they're lazy. He says that with a laughing face emoji, because he is also a teen gamer.
Yeah, that is true. I think that's the thing, though, isn't it? It's about, and the thing with gaming is that there's this sense of relax, isn't there? It's this sense of being able to, whenever I go on holiday, I always download games on my phone.
Sorry, he isn't now. He wants me to put that out there. He isn't now. He was, yes.
And it's about that sense of being able to completely turn your mind off. Turn your mind off, which is sometimes so essential, isn't it?
Well, that was the Love Island for me in the summer.
Oh, guilty pleasure.
I know. It's gone now. Oh, yes, yes. I'm pleased you have, because there's not many of us left, Jo.
No, but I tell you what, and I know that I'm most probably, I'm jumping the gun here, but I really love how, and I know it's great rubbish, brilliant TV, and I know that. However, and I say the great rubbish because it is so great that it's rubbish, and it's so rubbish that it's great.
Yeah.
But what I do love about reality TV is that you do see young men cry. And I love that. I love
all the time. All the time on Love Island.
They comfort one another. Yeah. I love it how they comfort one another. I love it how there's this brothers with the boys and how it's okay to hug and to, you know, just sit there together. I love that. And I think that's the beauty. As hard as it is.
I think that's such a good spin on it, because obviously there's a huge amount of negativity when it comes to things like Love Island, quite rightly so for certain things as well. But that's not why I watch. I literally just watch it to escape. But I think the way that you've spun that to find a real positive, I think that's brilliant. That's what we should be telling the students, because they're all going to watch it, aren't they?
Yeah, and I think that it's about realizing it, you know. We'll keep to the TV, but it's like with soaps, Emmerdale, EastEnders, Coronation Street, Hollyoaks, they spend so much time and money researching, getting the right, not just the storyline right, but making sure that they do the research into making sure that their characters that have the storyline play it well, you know. And it's from that, you know, I'll never forget watching EastEnders with Stacey and seeing her, you know, play, you know, being so mentally poorly, and actually realizing, you know, what it's, and it's done with such, it's so delicately, beautifully done.
Yeah.
The power of the TV, reality or soap, is can't be underestimated.
Someone's just texted in saying, not good for my mental health having to share the TV with my wife and go on Love Island journey. Anyway, moving on from the Love Island. So that was some really, that was really, really well put together, that answer to that question. So for me, just having you explain right from primary age, some of those, you know, real common threads that you get in terms of what presents themselves for a student struggling with mental health, that was really useful. Thank you.
It was really good
because it just put the nail on the head as to what we've got to really look out for. And I think we forget sometimes. I think we forget that's what's going on around us, and especially if you're a new teacher, if you're that early careers teacher, and everybody always talks about mental health all the time. It's spoken about students' mental health, blah blah, this, and I think sometimes they just want someone to sit them down and go, this is what some of the examples could be, and I think that gets forgotten sometimes. What got you into this specialism? Did you have any experiences or any inspiration when you were a student, Jo?
So the reason I wanted to, I suppose my main bread and butter, kind of the stepping stones that got me to where I am now as an emotional health practitioner, is being a counsellor first, so training as a counsellor. And the reason that I trained to be a counsellor is because I want to be somebody that I wish I had when I was 15, 16 years old. And I really struggled at school. Certainly in year 11 was my crunch year, and I feel that it was so hard for my teachers because they didn't necessarily have the time. And I will never forget, there's a couple of teachers, and all the teachers that I have the most respect for and the ones that just sit, you know, I've got a really good place in my heart, are the teachers that I used to be scared of. So that's
a yeah thing,
but there was this one lady who I wasn't very well with. I didn't have great eating habits, shall we say. And my tutor, bless her, I was able to sit and have lunch with her every lunchtime. And I was allowed to take a friend, and she said that I won't talk, I'm just going to be on my computer eating my lunch. And I just had her place to go and to have my lunch, and then I'd go. And I don't think she realises just how much that helped me, because she provided a space. She didn't have to provide a conversation. She didn't have to provide anything else.
Yeah.
Just two seats for me to go and have my lunch with a friend without anybody watching me while she sat there and did her work. And I feel like it's teachers that have such a remarkable effect. And this is the thing with teachers, is that you guys will never realise and never truly know just how you're able to change somebody's life for the better. Just, and you'll never be able to know that, really, because it's the little things, just like my tutor did for me, that allowed me to focus on meeting, I suppose.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that story, and obviously for your very, very nice words towards teachers as well. And I've seen staff do that in schools that I've worked in with, you know, with students that need somewhere else to go and eat. And they do it off their, a lot of the time, they do it off their own back. You know, they're obviously in communication with the right people, but they're the ones who have given up their lunch, so to speak, to go and sp- to go and sit or offer that space for those students. And, you know, some of them need a conversation, and some of them, like you've just shared, you just sit and get on with your work, but it's a space. And you're always allowed to bring your friend. And it just, I don't think staff realise that that's such a small thing can make such a powerful difference, because that might be the reason why they don't want to get out of bed in the morning, because they're so worried about what to do about the eating part of the day. That's a really lovely. Well, thank you for sharing that, because I think a lot of staff listening or teachers listening will be able to relate with, you know, a student that they've come across or a staff member that they know who's done that as well.
Yes, that's true.
My next question is how I'm going to speak about teachers within a school. How can teachers help improve the mental health of young people within a school? So what a great link we've just done there. So one way, if they're struggling to eat, you can offer a safe space. But maybe some ideas like that, but also some really useful programs. You know, are there any really good companies out there, strategies? Like, what can you tell the teachers that are tuning in this evening?
So my biggest thing is that, I don't know where to start. This is where we're going.
Can you speak into your phone a little bit more, Jo? Sorry.
My biggest thing is that so many teachers, I'm not too sure if they're worried about saying the wrong things. And obviously working with students that are, you know, contemplating life and thinking about, you know, suicide or self-harming, I get that that's massive for a teacher to be working with. But I think that many teachers are worried about saying the wrong thing or doing the wrong thing. But what we have to remind ourselves is there's this thing such as professional love, and that's about having boundaries and about having this level sense of respect. And what I need us to remember as teachers and as support staff is that every conversation, every interaction that you have with a student is an intervention. It's a fantastic quote. Every interaction is an intervention.
I'm going to write this one down. Yeah.
I don't know her surname, but it's Dr. Karen. I don't know her surname, but every
conversation is an intervention. Great. Yeah.
Every interaction is an intervention. And it's about just this realization that actually you don't need to be mental health professionals, because if we think about, you know, I'm 36. So if we was to think about,
hang on, Joe. I think we've just lost you a little bit there.
However, what we've got to do is we've got to bear in mind that just because I'm here, though, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you? Yeah, that's fine.
Can you hear me?
I think it's a bit of a Wi-Fi problem. It's okay. Don't worry.
I might come off. Oh, I am on.
No, you're fine. We can hear you.
Can you hear me on Wi-Fi? No, you're... Oh, cool. Oh, that's good. it was just about how teaching has changed over the years, and it's about realizing that it's just about simply being with the student. It's about having this ability to listen. So my biggest kind of top tips to build that mentally healthy classroom, that mentally healthy school, is about it's little things. It's about having this sense of having an open door policy where your tutees, your students know that at certain times of the day that if your door's open, then you're free to talk. It's about having a sense of invitation that, and this sounds a bit silly, but it's massive. It's about teachers taking pride in their room. So if they have a set room that they're given, it's about having this sense of respect and making the display boards just as if you've made an attempt in kind of trying to tidy it up, because a tidy classroom, an organised classroom, can really help a student feel settled. Mm-hmm. I always try and say to my school kids, you know, if you're feeling messy and muddled in your mind and you're waking up to a messy bedroom, that's just going to reconfirm how you're feeling in your mind. You know, my room's a mess. So it's a bit like that with the classroom, that if you can allow a child to feel this sense of calm and feeling secure and safe in your classroom, in your place, then that will just allow them to have that sense of feeling understood.
Yeah.
So I think that making a classroom tidy and making sure that the visual displays are kind of up to date or at least smart will just allow them to kind of have that stimulation and that kind of that motivating effect rather than it kind of feeling as if they haven't got that sense of calm, if that makes sense.
I am a massive fan of a tidy space. I go into classrooms that are a mess and I just feel like the students react to it and their behaviour mirrors the environment. So I am completely with you.
Yeah, I'm glad because that's such an important one. I also think another one is about English teachers, you know, no matter drama teachers, art teachers, I think it's about the importance of using case studies. You know, if you're talking about characters in a novel or if you're in drama and you're talking about characters, you know, it's about kind of allowing them to realise the kind of the characters within the subject, like within the books. And it's allowing them to kind of analyse the kind of the characters, you know, with the potential negative situations. And identifying, you know, how that character's reacted, but also how could we have reacted? Because sometimes it's about having a sense of understanding. And it's about that role model behaviour. And sometimes when children don't have that in their lives, because often for some of them it is just school, it's about bringing characters to life. So, you know, if they're talking about a character in a book or, you know, and it can be any subject, you know, any subject. It's about realising, you know, what are the things that you can draw from negative and positive that will just allow that student to kind of think about, oh, I wonder, oh, okay, yeah, I didn't think that they may have felt like that if they felt sad or... So I think that sometimes drawing on role models within your subjects, characters can also be quite helpful.
I have heard that, but I'm just trying to think if I was to sit down with department leads perhaps and say, look, you know, we're thinking about mental health, you know, could you introduce role models within your subjects? And I think that that's actually a really good way to bring it into the curriculum a little bit more, actually.
Yeah. Mm. And I think it's easy. I'm not going to make it sound easier said than done, but, you know, if it's a maths, then look at your legends, your heroes of mathematicians out there. You know, look at what was easy for them. I don't know, say it was a female.
Cara Vorderman?
Yeah, like what do you think was easy? What do you think was hard? You know, how do you think she felt when she didn't get the calculation right? But keeping it so simple and small that the kids don't even realise.
Yeah.
You know, just keeping it so simple and small that the kids don't even realise that you've just brought feelings into the room. Because what we need to do is we need to create an atmosphere where all feelings are allowed. So I feel that if we can allow that and allow children to realise that there's feelings out there and allow having those boundaries in place within your classroom, adding those role models or adding those characters, you know, without the children thinking about it can just be really helpful. And just going back to Love Island, that's a really good example, isn't it, of just seeing those and validating those feelings of when those young men were feeling sad, overwhelmed, angry that they cried, or, you know, however they reacted. So yeah, it's just a mixture really, but without the children realizing.
We just got a question texted in, Joe. Are you right to answer?
Go for it.
Yep. So Tom's just said, Joe, interested in what you were saying about the scary teachers are ones who have a space in your heart. Why and how?
So those teachers that used to scare me, which is a bit of a harsh word. I'm really sorry to say that.
But those
teachers are the ones that had they had my respect. They had my... I don't know, they just got it. They got it. And they were very... I'd never, for one lady in particular, you'd never hear her shout unless she was angry. And I think that is a beautiful way to be a teacher, in a sense that you keep that voice but only when you need it.
Yeah.
Hold on to that.
You don't even lose it when you're angry. It's like a drama. Yeah.
And I'm not a teacher. You know, it's hard enough being a parent, let alone being, you know, when you've got 30 kids in a classroom. But it's about having that ability to communicate, and then it's about having that. And children, you know, it's like parenting, because I do quite a few parenting workshops and webinars. You know, and you often hear parents say, you know, I've lost it with my children. It's okay to lose it, because they need to know when enough is enough.
Mm.
But I think it's about having that level of respect that student knows when they've pushed it. They know. And often those children that do push it know where the line is.
Yeah, I think we're ultimately all want to get that stare. You know, my mother, when we were growing up, she'd stare at us in the right way, and that was it. She had us. We didn't do anything wrong because of that stare. So if you can get a teacher to do that stare for 30 students off the wall, and then they stare at them in the right way, that's it. You're winning. Yeah, there's respect right there.
Yeah. So I think it's just so it was that respect. And they had discipline within the class where you just didn't hear them shout.
Yeah, routines, consistency.
Yeah, the discipline, the level of respect, you know. And let's face it, if a teacher's going to shout at me, then I'm most definitely going to shout back at a teacher. I get that, but it is about, and I make it sound simple, Libby, and I'm not a teacher, and I haven't got the patience to be a teacher, because if somebody told me that they didn't want to learn, I'd be like, okay then, and that is not what teachers do.
Off you go.
See you later. Thank you very much. Goodbye. That's not what teaching is about. So, and it takes somebody. You know, teaching is a hard job, and I feel that I'm extremely fortunate to work in several schools, and to see behind the scenes. My best friend's a maths teacher as well. I know it's not easy, and I deliver clinical supervision, which is to teachers or to SLT members.
And that, yeah, I was gonna talk a bit about that as well, if you had time. So just before, because obviously we've just been told we can go over a little bit as well, so there's absolutely no rush at all. So you mentioned in your profile that you believe early intervention is key. What do you mean by that?
So early intervention is something that schools are going to see more and more of.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, early intervention is the importance of getting in there quick. So it's about the importance of safeguarding. It's about the importance of you realising that, okay, Joe Bloggs has been down, and this is his second week of being down, or this is his second week of being snappy. It's about you just taking into consideration, you know, they're not in the right place. They've just not been themselves lately. And it's early intervention is about the importance of painting a picture, so then the right support can be kind of intervened when it's needed. So, for example, it's about building self-esteem. It might be about kind of building positive coping strategies. It might be learning to manage their anger. It might be kind of trying to regulate their emotions. But early intervention is about identifying what support do they need, and what can you put in place? And interventions are normally in schools are more so, you've got one-to-one, you have got your mentoring, you've got your counselling, but kind of the interventions that I'm working with at the moment is group interventions, where it's small groups, maybe about 6 to 8. Some schools might do it kind of bigger groups or smaller, but it's about the importance of being able to identify that, okay, we've got X amount of students that are really lacking confidence right now. Okay, let's get an intervention in there, which might be a 6 to 8 week program aimed to kind of focus on building that and boosting that self-esteem, that self-worth. And to do that might be simple exercises such as allowing them to become aware of their inner critic and kind of allowing them to kind of find their own voice of having this inner coach, this inner cheerleader. And I think that's so important, because we all have, and as adults, we have that, don't we? We know that voice.
Yeah.
imposter syndrome or just that critic that goes at us. But obviously for students and for children, that can just be all that they hear, all they hear. So it's about putting in those interventions of where you can identify the problem and put the right support in as soon as you can.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for talking us through that as well. In your own experience, how confident do you feel about teachers and their knowledge of this topic?
I feel that teachers have it extremely hard. Mm-hmm. They don't have my pity or anything like that. They have my utter respect, but I think teachers have it extremely hard. There is a lot that goes into teaching on many, many different levels. Behaviour, being aware of their students' emotional well-being, having to kind of allow the class to learn whilst allowing them to feel safe. There's so much that goes into teaching.
Yeah.
But I feel that when it comes to mental health, it's not that it's the taboo topic. It's not that anymore. I worry that too many people out there are worried about saying the wrong thing.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I'll give you an example. My husband's ex-army, and his very good friend is going through a bit of a rocky patch at the moment. He's just been diagnosed with depression. And Phil, who is ex-army, because he doesn't know what to say, he just won't say anything at all. He will talk about the weather. He will talk about the football. And I feel that I get it, because it's just that Phil does not know how to have those conversations. So I often think that sometimes when we don't know what to say, when we don't know what to do, it's not that we don't care. It's not that we're not offering that professional love. It's just that we don't feel as if we can help support that student, when actually we can. It's about being there for them. So kind of going back to that question, I just wonder if teachers, support staff are often scared in case they do say the wrong thing. And obviously when I'm talking about that, I mean about, say they've got a student that's just said that they want to go and attempt suicide, or they've got a student that's self-harming, for example. So, you know, they're big things that are going on in a student's life. And that teacher, there's a real level of having to maybe not carry it, but support them. And I think sometimes that can be overwhelming.
Yeah. What can you suggest for training then for staff that feel like they want more, they want to know more, they want to be more confident with it? Is there any ideas what you would suggest when it comes to training?
Yeah, so there's some really great training providers out there. So you've got Young Minds, they do some fantastic training.
Yeah.
You've got Mentally Healthy Schools with the Anna Freud Project. They've got some amazing ones as well. The MHFA, Mental Health First Aid England, they provide courses for adult, youth and armed forces. So I'm just going to go with youth there. I'm not too sure why I said the other two, but they deliver youth courses. And I know myself, being a mental health first aid instructor, it's a fantastic course because you get to learn the signs, but you also get to kind of have the confidence in learning how to have those conversations. And if I'm honest with you, I think that's one of my most popular talks whenever I go to deliver either an inset day or a twilight session, is about kind of how to have those tricky conversations with confidence.
Mm.
With confidence, because it's hard. It is hard.
It is really hard. And then I've worked in schools before where they suggest you use a script and things, and then, oh, I don't know if I can use a script. That doesn't work.
Yeah.
It
takes it all away.
When no, I agree.
It's just about being there with them.
And I think that's, like, we'll say it again, but you said every interaction is an intervention. So any new member of staff, any early careers teacher who's listening to this, who's feeling about it, that's the key. Like, just having your door open in the right place, just being there is enough, isn't it? So if because obviously there's huge amounts at the moment, and there's always been huge amounts when you're a teacher, you're working in schools, you know, there can be some real barriers when it comes to staff well-being within a school setting. So what what can you offer to sort of support teachers with this, or what can you talk about with that?
I feel that this is the hardest one because it starts from the top. It really does start from the top, and it's about the leadership of the school. It's about this sense of just the school, of the trust. But it's also about that individual responsibility as a teacher, about maintaining your own mental fitness. It's about you staying mentally well, emotionally well, physically well. And the thing too often is that it's so easy when we're feeling a bit fluey, when we're feeling a bit achy, you know, that, okay, we might not necessarily call in sick, but we do know that we'll have an easy night, or we know that we'll have an early night, or we know that we need to have some good food or a Lem sip or stay hydrated. But actually, it's as teachers, it's that responsibility for you to know that that's great when it comes to your physical health, but actually, what about your mental health? What about your mental health? And it's about you learning the signs. But equally, it's about you knowing how to do something about it. So what is it that brings you joy? What is it that brings you that sense of, oh, because, you know, we're so quick to charge our mobile phone sometimes every day or every night. But what about ourselves? You know, we're on the go. And as teachers, crikey, you know, you have a 5-minute window of maybe having to move lessons, but, you know, for going to the toilet or, you know, quickly grabbing something to eat or having a drink. School life is really, really busy. And the thing is with teaching is that, and this is no disrespect to people that work in offices, but if you were poorly or if you were hungover, you could crawl into work if you worked in an office, because you could just stay in your office. You know, you could just hide in there. As teachers, you can't. You have to turn up. And not only do you have to turn up to school, but you have to turn up to every lesson. And that is sometimes what is so hard, is that kind of being that role model, being that professional.
And I think for someone like me, if there's something going on with me, it's all over my face. Like if I go into a conversation with one of my bosses, and I've heard something that I don't like or has taken me back, it's always all over my face. One of my bosses used to say, "Libby, I can just tell by your face." And I was like, "Oh, I'm really trying to be professional. I can't help my face." So going into, you know, teach in front of students, yes, you can put an act on, and you put your mask, your act on. But it's usually, for me, it's still in my eyes and my face, and I can't hide that. That's just who I am. But it's really difficult at times.
No, I totally get that, and I think that. I suppose what I'm saying is that you just can't hide, can you?
Nope.
You
work
in an office, you could just go and hide in your office and not move all day.
Although if you did come in hungover, not that obviously we're not talking about that as teachers, we are very respectable ambassadors and role models, but sitting when I was 18 years old and I had a job in an office behind a desk, sitting behind a desk is a very long day, whereas at least you can present yourself and get it done quite quickly.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that is true.
So swings and roundabouts, but yeah. My last question for you, and then what I'm going to do is I'm going to play an advert and I'm going to introduce Hayley, is you've got a YouTube channel and you talk about the fact that you set that up in lockdown. Correct me if I'm wrong. Can you talk me through this a little bit and the purpose behind it?
So I did I delivered a keynote speech in Leeds. Last March time, no, February it was. Yeah. And these, I'll never forget them. I never know who they are. I'll never know who they were. However, they said, you know, Joe, you should reach more than, you know, 5 students a day. You know, you need to get onto social media. You need to have a YouTube channel. Thought nothing of it, mentioned it to my sister on my way home. Ha, ha, ha. And then COVID came around and my sister just said to me, like, Joe, if you're ever going to start a channel, do it now. And the reason that I started the Flourish YouTube channel is that there were so many young people that were already having support with a counsellor or some sort of intervention that, because of COVID and schools closing, was suddenly stopped. There's so many, and there are way too many students out there that are struggling with their mental health, yet either on the waiting list for OONS or CAMHS, which is kind of your free support service with the NHS for the young people. And sometimes those young people are told that their worries, their problems aren't big enough, then, you know, they're not bad enough. So there's so many young people out there that are in limbo of having support. And also I found that there's not many people on the internet that are professional that not only say, you know, are you struggling with this? So for example, are you addicted to your mobile phone? But also to be kind of have steps to help them. So that's why I started the Flourish YouTube channel, in a way to just kind of offer support to those young people. And it was just, my first video was just for my school kids. And then I got contacted by another head teacher, an ex-colleague, that was just Joe, if you can open these up and just have them more general, I'd love to use them for my school during lockdown. And then it just kind of snowballed. And plus one of my school kids told me that I'd never get 1,000 subscribers. I'm on my way there now. So I can't wait to prove them wrong.
Wow, that's absolutely brilliant. And I know that there's some really powerful assemblies on there as well. So if anybody needs an assembly, it's a very good resource. So thank you so much for having that for us to use. So what I'm going to do is, go on.
No, I was just going to say, I think that's the biggest thing is that as staff, we have these students that we worry about. We have these students that we might, you know, do safeguarding concerns, my concerns, CPOMs. But actually, there's this sense of, as much as we can say see you tomorrow and knowing that we've kind of done our duty of care, it's also kind of equipping a teacher to have that additional signpost to say, oh, by the way, you know, check out this channel, because I think that sometimes it helps empower teachers by knowing about that signposting. So just to quickly say, Young Minds are fantastic, Shout UK are fantastic. And you've got Cooth as well. So it helps teachers to have that knowledge to signpost young people.
Some really good websites there. What I might do for those that are listening now or those that want to listen at a later stage is I'll tweet some of the ones that Jo's been talking about, and then we can have them on file for you. I'm going to play an advert and then I'm going to bring Hayley into the conversation. Jo, are you okay to stay on the line?
I am, yeah, I'm fine.
Because I think Hayley's got some questions for you. If you're okay to answer them.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, what I'll do is I'll mute you and then I'll bring you in at the right time. Okay.
Perfect, thanks.
All right, see you in a bit.
Need support with your phonics teaching? Did you know Oxford University Press now has 3 DfE-validated programmes to help you? Read Write Ink Phonics, Floppy's Phonics, and the brand new Essential Letters and Sounds. Essential Letters and Sounds will get all your children reading well, quickly, using phonics books you may already have in your classroom. Developed by the Knowledge Schools Trust English Hub, it's affordable, easy to use, and makes teaching phonics with letters and sounds more effective. Whatever your school's phonics needs, Oxford has the solution. To find out more and receive support from your expert local educational consultant, visit oxfordprimary.com/phonics.
Right, good evening, Hayley. Can you hear me?
I can, yeah. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, we can hear you loud and clear. Thank you so much for giving up your evening.
You're very welcome.
How's school been? So I know you've been back in the thick of it for the last few days. Not been sat on a beach like me this afternoon.
I definitely haven't been sat on the beach. I wish I was with this weather today.
It
was
sorry.
Like an oven in schools, like most schools always are.
Yeah, nice bit of COVID ventilation, isn't there?
Absolutely. No, it's been brilliant. I think it's lovely after COVID to actually go back to school being school a little bit and have the students mixing again.
And I think it's quite nice that it's sunny, because the dread of getting up in the dark and then going home in the dark and wearing your winter clothes already, maybe we've got a week left where we can hold
just
on
to enjoy that daylight. Yeah, get them outside.
Yeah, as much as possible. So can you, for those that are listening now or that are going to download later on, can you just introduce your sort of role within the school and who you are?
Yeah, I'm Hayley Coles. I've been a pastoral assistant for the past 4 years. And I've now become the year 9 and 10 attainment lead. It was decided at the school I work at that actually a lot of the attainment and attendance of school was actually linked to pastoral and behaviour. So they've introduced these new roles. And I also decided if that wasn't enough, I'd pick up the PSHE as well.
Yes, for the and careers. So, you do the careers.
And careers
as well.
Throw it all in there. Many hats. Yeah, why not? Why not? Mix it all up a little bit.
I think, well, this is why I wanted to get you on, because we are sort of talking about student mental health. We're talking about student wellbeing. And I think all of your roles, you come across that daily, actually.
Absolutely.
So I'm just going to ask you a few questions, and then you're going to get a bit of time to ask Jo some questions, because I know that we've got lots to ask her as well. So how often do you see students struggling with mental health within your role?
If I'm completely honest, when I took on the job, I didn't think mental health would be as big amongst teenagers as it actually was. And I know when I started the role and can really empathize with new teachers that come in, there is so much more going on than you could possibly understand as an outsider that doesn't work in education. I mean, I don't know about you, but I wouldn't be a teenager in high school again at all. Now it's 24/7. It's social media.
It doesn't help having a phone, does it? Yeah, there you go.
No, yeah, the social media. They're constantly contactable, and therefore it's that pressure is constantly on them.
And I think for their well-being, like Jo was talking about the phones and switching it off for our well-being as staff as well. But for them, I don't know, that like you, I remember you told me once that most of bullying, most of issues, it all happens when they leave
school.
The building. And then obviously what you do is you have to pick it all up, because it comes into the school building the next day. Whereas when we were at school, I mean, I do know all my my friends' home landlines.
You still remember the landline.
You could
only have 59 minutes, because then you got charged if you went over the hour.
Oh, yeah, I remember there was some beeping, and my dad used to be like, "Are you on that phone?" I'm like, "Yes." Back in the day, hey.
Yeah.
But I like what massive effort to do a bit of bullying over a landline. Like it just isn't or wasn't the same in the slightest. So this idea of mental health within sort of students that we work at or work with, it's huge. And I think anybody who doesn't go into a school setting or, you know, hasn't got a teenager themselves, perhaps it's quite difficult to explain to them how much of a part of life it is for them.
Absolutely. And it's so easy to say just turn your phone off, but then as a teenager that's become their left hand now. It's the whole FOMO, isn't it? What's happening if I'm not with my phone? Because I can come into school and I've missed something that happened last night. But obviously the more negative side is you are then contactable, and a lot of students will come in with mental health concerns because they're sleep deprived, because they're up all night on their phone, because they're constantly contacting each other.
But I don't turn mine off.
As adults, we're just as terrible.
I do turn like the sound and the vibrate and put it like, do you know, so if it goes off, I don't know. But then I was thinking, crikey, what if something actually happened? I'll just be asleep. Yeah. I'll have to wait till the morning.
Because you use them as your alarm, you do your online shopping, check the news. You're constantly picking up your phone.
So what types of strategies, because you're sort of completely embedded in this, do you employ when a student is identified as struggling? So sort of take us through what would happen if a student came to or presented with signs of struggling.
I think ultimately, as pastoral, the thing we have to do is try to build that relationship and that trust with the student for them to have found the courage to come forward and say, actually, I have been considering or have self-harmed, or I'm feeling depressed or anxious, or arrive in floods of tears. It's a huge thing as a teenager to sit down and open up and trust somebody to actually talk to. So it's one of those situations that you can't rush it. You can't be distracted and tapping away on your computer or talking to somebody else while they're trying to talk to you. So we always try and just take the student off and have that conversation and try and find some common ground. What do they actually enjoy doing? What can we try and work with them to enjoy? So it's not just this whole, oh, okay, I'm sorry you feel like this. Right, let's get some support for you. Mm-hmm. It's there's also let's find some of the good that's going on in your day-to-day life as well. And communication with home, parents play a huge part. Parents play a massive part in supporting school and their students.
And I think like you've explained it beautifully there, like if you're an early careers teacher, so you're just about to step into a classroom for the first time this week, just finding some common grounds, like, yes, they've absolutely just opened up to you, and that's the bravest thing that they've ever done, perhaps. Yeah. I mean, like if I said earlier, oh God, what about using a script? Like if you then use this script, or if you start going, right, then I want you to do this intervention, we're going to get this person in support. You lose the human side of it. So just finding some common ground is absolutely key. And relationships is what you said at the beginning as well.
Absolutely. Mental health isn't a one size fits all, as Joe would hopefully agree with it. It's so individual and so personal that if you are completely reading from a script, you will automatically sound quite robotic, and it does take the emotion out. And a lot of the time that student's looking for that emotional connection know that adult says, I get it, and I'm going to help you as best I can. And I think sometimes you have to put that human element. And I think for new staff, use your pastoral team. Absolutely go and use your pastoral team, because they will be able to help and support, and just not do it for you necessarily, but just be your backup so that you have that confidence to go and speak to that student as well.
Yep. And I would say to new staff, make friends with your pastoral team and your admin team.
Absolutely.
And then you're on for a good strong start there.
And the catering team. Let's get it right to the hard through the day.
No, I completely agree. So you've kind of spoken a little bit about some of the things that you do within a school. So what else would you do to help a teacher deal with these things, like even through your new roles perhaps? Like, would you train staff by using external companies, assemblies? Like, tell me a little bit about that.
So we actually I have done some of my training with Joe before, so I've done some mental health first aid with Joe. So we have on our PD days, we will always dedicate part of that to pastoral. We always update training. I know a couple of days ago when I was talking to the schools about PSHE, I had to make it very clear that I understand that some of these topics are really uncomfortable for some teachers, and it's going to get those particular students that want to embarrass you shouting certain things out. So let's look at that training that we can put in place just to give you that support. And the biggest thing we have at the moment is the LGBTQ community. It's a huge new gender identity, and teachers, it's like grenades, isn't it? What can you say? What shouldn't you say? So we're actually now working with Outreach, who are going to come and do some support with teachers to kind of go, it's okay to say this. It's okay to point them in this direction for support. It's okay to offer this. So it's constantly developing, because every time we think we're kind of getting one step ahead, everything changes. It's constantly developing. Some new social media app will come along and we have to all retrain again because we have no idea what's happening. And teenagers are, I remember there was one app where you could anonymously ask a question about yourself with a photo, and people could say whatever they liked that they thought was nice about you or was a flaw. And students were coming to us saying, but this person said this, and as an adult we're going, why would you put that up? Why would you put yourself in that situation? And then we have to retrain and go, okay, what is this app? What, you know, what can we say to teachers? How do we support it? So we're trying to be proactive and be less reactive.
Yeah. And I think that's what Joe was saying, that early intervention is key, and what you've given are some actual strategies that are going on in school right now. So that's really powerful. Thank you. And you also said that, you know, part of your role is to try and train staff to get their confidence. Like if you're talking, if somebody's come to you and they're talking about something that's quite difficult, like how do you present that as a staff member? So again, that is absolutely brilliant and definitely something that all schools need to do perhaps more of. So in your opinion, what strategies in a school work really well and which ones do not?
I I really love the whole teacher champion strategy with students, just because I work in pastoral and just because I've done some qualifications and I can say that I know what I'm talking about doesn't mean that student wants to come and talk to me. And actually, they might have a maths teacher that absolutely adore and get on really well. So my first thing with a student is, who is it that you feel you can go to? And obviously being careful.
Have you ever had a student? Sorry, I'm talking over you. It's really rude. Have you ever had a student, because I've actually come across this quite recently, who doesn't have a champion or doesn't think?
Or they don't think they have a champion. Yeah, and a lot of it as well can be, none of the teachers like me. Nobody likes me. They all hate me. I know what they say about me. I had one student that came to me a couple of days ago. We had obviously new staff, and they said, oh, you'll know all about me. And this teacher said, well, I don't. I said, miss, have you not told them all about me and this and that? And it's I don't arrange coffee mornings to have, you know, to give these preconceived ideas of who you are, but it's how they think. They think that, you know, if they've been naughty one year, that all the teachers that start know that. But actually, when you actually sit them in front of a teacher and that teacher says, I think you're pretty brilliant, it's completely changing for that student. And yeah, that I'm really lucky where I work. I know that I could go to any of those staff members and they would absolutely say, yeah, I'll champion that person, not a problem. And I think that is probably our most powerful tool in school. The other things that we're really good at doing is the peer-to-peer support. COVID squashed it a little bit for us, but there's nothing more delightful to watch than years 10 and 11 kind of supporting 7, 8 and 9 and going off to do some baking or kick a football around and just have that time to talk to each other, because I'm quite old and crinkly to 11-year-olds, whereas somebody in year 10 or 11 is quite cool and can be spoken to.
Yeah, I was talking about that earlier, about having sort of student ambassadors when it comes to well-being as well. I think that's a really good initiative.
Anna Freud do some brilliant training. So do the Diana Awards. They do the whole anti-bullying training. Yeah.
I think, as I said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to collate all of your links, all your resources, and then I can get that out on Twitter for anybody that's wanting to do it in a bit more depth and detail. So that'd be really good. Do you have some questions for Jo?
Yeah, well, actually, the one that I'd be quite interested in, when you're talking about students and staff, and it's something that's been coming up quite a bit recently, is obviously the past 2 years, there's been no GCSEs and teachers have marked. This year, year 11 have come back from a year and a half of lockdown. They're being thrown straight into the fact that they've got their mocks in November. But actually, that's the pressure for the students and the staff, because this is going to be the first potentially official GCSE results that come out. And it's kind of, as a school, how are we going to go about, or how can we go about not only supporting the students, but we've got the staff to look after as well that are now teaching these students. It's a huge pressure on them.
Jo, are you okay to help answer that?
I am. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, we can hear you fine.
That is such a tough question, by the way.
I know, it's a really good question. I was almost really looking for like audio effects to sort of applaud as it came in.
I think that if I just let you say why, because I found working in pastoral, we have teachers come and speak to us probably as much sometimes as students can, because the teachers go, I just need 5 minutes to offload. And it's a big thing at the moment of, actually, I could be judged by results that students get, and they've had Google Classrooms for a year.
I think that's the thing though, isn't it? Hello, by the way, Hayley.
Hello.
So I think that's a really good point, because the thing is, we've got to remember, is it's about kind of the reality check, and it's about how different the last couple of years have been with regards to grading and the central assessed grades. However, it's about the young people realising it's this level, kind of being real, I suppose, is the biggest thing, just being real. But it is about how it comes from the top. It really is so important that senior leadership can identify that with their members of team, or when you've got head of faculty that can recognise. So it really is like a trickle effect, because as you know, pastoral in particular, you know, if you've got stressed teachers, you will have even more stressed students. So So it is just about that balance of staff. So yeah, staff well-being is massive at the moment. But when it comes to those exams, it's always about allowing the students to realise that these are mocks. You know, the what they're about to sit in November, which just sounds so close, doesn't it? It sounds so scary. Mm-hmm. Will allow them, you know, try and turn that experience into a positive. You know, this is going to allow you to realise what are your strengths, what are the ones, you know, where do we need to work on. It will allow you to experience sitting in a hall where it is not your actual GCSEs. These are your mocks. I know that at my school we did it came in really handy. We had Rosette. Now, as you can imagine, in an exam hall, not many people have the surname that begins with the letter Z. So what we did is we had our anxious ones, and we called it the best way to describe it was a row of TLC. These were the students that needed extra TLC, and they almost motivated one another. It's quite tough because they've got to be like strong enough to be able to sit in a group at the end of the kind of at the outside of the hall on the row Z. But sometimes that can be quite handy because they have a sense of knowing where they're going. They're knowing that they're at that end of the sports hall. So that sometimes can be really, really quite handy. So that might be worthwhile for some of the listeners to consider. Just about implementing row Z, because that can be just because then they know they're going in that door. They're going and they've got their seat there. They know where the toilets are. And, you know, having a vigilator, an exam vigilator that is, you know, extra sensitive to needs where there's somebody that might be having a panic attack or something like that. So, yeah, always consider a row Z. TLC said row.
I think I'll probably go sit in the row Z. Yeah,
I love that idea of sitting in row Z.
I think Hayley, we probably only got time for one more question.
No, that's fine.
Is that okay?
Yep. No, the other one I had was just about the pressures now that are on school, kind of post COVID. Would you say that you've noticed that the need for the support for teachers has actually gone up during lockdown with the support for students? Because I mean, personally, I found doing pastoral incredibly difficult when working from home. And actually that trying to switch off at the end of the day, there was no structure. And now coming back to school, it's kind of resetting those boundaries again.
And I think that itself is that we've got to realise and recognise where we've been. And when we've been asked to teach or to work in our homes, you know, it's quite a personal thing, certainly when it comes to like a role such as pastoral, where we're in our lounge with a plain background, you know, we've taken our pictures down. You know, having to teach in our home is a real, I'll never forget the first time I did a counselling session, and it was literally, and I was literally up in the spare bedroom because I couldn't be downstairs. And it's like, wow, this sense of like, there goes that boundary of that work kind of home life balance, because my work, just like all teachers, was in their home. So I think what we have to do is we have to learn from that, and I think we have to put boundaries back into place where we do have home and we do have work. I read this book in the summer, and sorry to be a bit morbid, but the point of this book was you're never going to be on your deathbed thinking, gosh, I wish I worked harder, or I wish I spent more time at school, or I wish, do you know what I mean? We're never going to be in that position. I highly doubt it. So it's about having that reality check, and it's about keeping grounded. It's about having a level of expectations which are good enough. I think sometimes as teachers, it's too easy to be perfectionists. When actually
absolutely.
It's about realizing that I am a good enough teacher. I teach good lessons. You know, and it's about having this sense of being able to own who you are and being proud of that without realizing that, you know, you don't have to be, you know, a perfectionist in everything.
And I think that's an absolutely fantastic way to end it. If anybody is listening now and struggles with staff mental health or struggles with their own mental health and they're a teacher, you are good enough. And that's the point. You're definitely good enough because you wouldn't be working in that school. And just making time, having a space or your door open for any student to come and speak to you, and then finding that common ground, like Hayley says, going then to sort of upskill yourself if you need some confidence within certain topics, or finding something that you have in common with them. That is the beginning. That's where it all starts, and that is absolutely good enough. And if not, that's brilliant, isn't it? Thank you so much, first of all, Joe, for coming on, especially after the beginning of the coming into the show and everything. And I think you've offered some absolutely brilliant practical solutions, some really good advice, but you've also just explained really clearly what this issue can present itself as to staff within a school. So thank you so much for coming on.
You're more than welcome. Thank you for having me.
No worries. Have a lovely evening, Jo. And Hayley, thank you so much for coming on.
No, thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure. Yeah.
Was it as bad as you thought?
No, it's fine. I didn't swear, did I? So it's fine.
No, you didn't. But that would have been okay. But just getting your sort of insight, because you're really in the thick of it at the moment, and you always are in the thick of it as a pastoral leader, and obviously when you're doing your careers and your PSHE role as well, that absolutely just some of the techniques and the strategies that you were talking about is so simple, but that's exactly what you need to start doing if you are a member of staff or a teacher or anybody who works in a school who does struggle with this concept. So thank you again.
No, thank you. I'll speak to you soon.
All right, have a nice evening.
Take care.
Bye. So those were our two guests this evening, and thank you anybody that sort of tuned in to the show, who's liked the show, who's been listening. As I said, I'm going to speak to Joe and I'm going to speak to Hayley, and I'm going to collate all the sort of the useful websites and the links and, you know, all the things that they were talking about, and then I'll get it all out on social media. You can also message me if you want to, you know, pick up on anything that was spoken about this evening, and you want perhaps a little bit more information or a bit of guidance, and I can perhaps, you know, push you in the right direction with the right things. So that's at Libby Isaac on Twitter. And again, thank you for listening. So next week, I'm not here. It's our open evening. So the following week, I am back, and I've got a show actually really personal to me, I think. I've got Flexible Teacher Talent coming on as my guest. So I've got Lindsay Patient and hopefully Lucy Rose, and we're going to be talking about flexible teaching hours and sort of what that means, what are the issues, what's your experience been with that. Obviously it's quite a good one for me, because if you listen, you know that I have a one-year-old and a three-year-old. But also I want to hear from you if you actually think flexible working hours can cause barriers, not perhaps in a negative way, but just, you know, it causes barriers within a school, especially within leadership itself. And also these women, they're so good at what they do. They really helped me empower myself. And, you know, this was all given to me by somebody else who helped empower me at the beginning of the summer. So if you want to ask them anything at all, and I'll put a Twitter thread out before the show about, you know, how they can help you, what's out there information wise for you, then that's definitely the show for you. Now I'm going to end on this. Every interaction is an intervention. Absolute brilliant quote there from Joe, and it really does sum up what we've been talking about. So thank you for listening in, and I'll see you in 2 weeks' time.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.